Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We're back.
After a couple of weeks.
Finally, yes. Oh, one thing and another, isn't it? Yeah. It just never ends. Real life, I hate it.
How have you been? I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've been all right. I've been doing lots of real life stuff with like relatives and stuff. One of my grandparents was 90 this week, and I had to go along and be the official photographer, which was a bad move because I learned lots of important lessons about why you do sometimes need to use the flash when indoors.
Yeah, one of my first lessons on photography was never do anything like that.
Yeah, I know. I managed to salvage enough photos to keep the pitchfork wielding mob from the door, but yeah, it wasn't a triumph.
Yeah, the big thing, if anyone ever says be a wedding photographer, no.
Yeah. I would certainly not want the responsibility of being paid to do that, that's for sure. So I'm going to talk about computer game instead, anyway.
Okay. I was just going to say, if you're going to be a photographer, play Dead Rising.
That's the kind of photographer. You see, I've learned everything I learned about photography. I learned from Bioshock, so, yeah. You know, that was me basically taunting a lot of the monsters at the party into charging at me and then trying to take some photos before they killed me with a massive drill. It was a strange do.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah, mostly I've been playing X Rebirth. So
still
talk about that.
You're still playing the worst game ever made.
One of the worst games ever made. Not the worst game ever made. I think Big Rig On the Road Racing 2.
I believe Ride.
A game which the AI just went forwards and didn't ever stop.
I believe Ride to Hell Retribution may be quite out there.
So in my quest to play all games from all everywhere on the spectrum of goodness, I've decided to give that another go. And I was talking about it in some previous shows about how I was got suddenly quite sidetracked by the RTS empire building aspect of it, that it tantalises with you a little bit during the story, and I made a big mistake. I was doing great there. I got my space station really big, lots of, because it builds in sections, so you commission you pick a section from the list on the little architect window, and then it goes off and gives you a little shopping list. So I was then going off to the neighboring star system and dreadfully pillaging and raiding the Plutarch Mining Corporation. I got to the point where I thought, okay, I could, because I talked last time about how I was making armed incursions with capital ships into their production systems and then going to their nearby neighbouring faction stations and buying the stuff and then getting the hell out, you know, in a big organised raid. And then I thought, if I'm going to be doing this, why am I actually buying this stuff? Because if you go to these stations and you wait long enough, an enemy freighter will come along, dock, presumably pay a lot of imaginary money behind the scenes for the goods, load the goods onto their freighter, and then slowly and patiently undock and move their way away to the jump point.
I think I can see where you're going with this.
Do you see where I'm going with this? Yeah. And I thought, well, if I'm just busting my wind here, what's the point in leaving the money on the counter if I'm going to be doing these massive armed robberies over and over again? I might as well just take the stuff from the freighters. And then I thought, and why blow up the freighters either? I might as well, because, you know, we live in an age where you have to pay 5p for a carrier bag now. So I thought, well, I might as well just keep the freighter that the goods are on intact, crew it with fresh
freighter
stuff.
Freighter for life.
Freighter for life, exactly, yeah. As I didn't pay my 5p for a freighter to carry it all away with either. So that was all going swimmingly, and I was adding more and more sections to this starbase, and it gets really big. I mean, if you've even dabbled with the game, one of the redeeming features you probably will have remembered was that the starbases and the stations themselves are fantastic, some of the best looking I've seen in any space game. And you get to fly in and amongst the superstructure and scan the different information points to build up, find discounts and bargains and stuff. And the missions are available by flying up to little icons on the exteriors of the stations. And they're really quite impressive structures. So I was quite pleased and surprised to realise that you actually get to build one of these yourself as well. And it's a huge, huge thing, this drone forge. As you add more sections, each section's the different sections are responsible for different aspects of the station as well. They're not just cosmetic, so you can add a storage section to increase its capacity for finished goods and input goods and so on. There are different production subsystems that you can build onto it, and each of those comes with a production process. So it will actually do more things as you add more stuff to it. So the first bit you build is a steel refinery. It takes ore and turns it into refined metal, which you can then sell on. And then there's another module you can add, which takes silicon and turns it into silicon wafers. And then the third bit, the major bit you can add, which takes some of those bits and a few other additional inputs and turns out drones, which is useful because you can then sort of stock up cargo and construction drones and fighter drones on all the capital ships that you've been stealing, because usually you have to shoot those off and kill them before you can steal the ships safely. So useful, yeah, and a lot of fun. And then you can build these little floating sort of really heavy gun emplacements that you add on around the outside as well. And I was just about working on the last ones of those when I accidentally pushed on the story a bit.
Yeah.
I, you know, leaning against a door that wasn't bolted from the other side. And next thing I know, I've been whisked away to a whole other star system and the gate's shut behind me. It's, you know, how in pretty much every first-person shooter ever, the beginning of Act 2, they capture you and take away all your cool guns. Yeah, somehow they've managed to do that to me in an empire-building RTS game. I found myself in an entirely new star system with the gate closed behind me, no access to my patiently built up empire that I was really enjoying building, and just the stupid Albion skunk ship. And then you had to go away and do a lot of dogfighty stupid story missions. I couldn't even do what I was doing up to that point, which was bringing in my capital ship to do the heavy lifting for me. So it was sort of forcing me to play it properly again, which was annoying.
That's really unfair. Yeah. Games should not force you to play them properly.
Playing it properly is not its strongest suit, I have to say. So yeah, I trogged around this whole new Omicron Lyra system, which looks quite spectacular, actually. I mean, they really do make an effort to make each... Okay, so one of the downsides of this game... I'm going to now describe to you, dear listener, the entire star map of this game. So draw a square, then rub out the lower edge.
Okay.
There you go. That's your star map for X Rebirth. There are four star systems with three connecting lines. That, you know, that's somewhat different from the X3 game, which was about 150 star systems, and you can Google for the map for that, but it was quite a complicated crochet net of stuff.
Elite must make their brains explode.
Yes, Elite, with its effectively one-to-one scale real-life simulated universe of, like, 65,000 light-years across. Four star systems. So yes, I was patiently building up in Star System 2, raiding Star System 1 for my stuff. And then some plot happened and I found myself whisked away into Star System 3 and the door shut behind me.
You should have built stuff in Star System 3 to start with.
Well, no, because you're not allowed in there until you do the plot bit. And I did the wrong plot bit and next thing you know, right. So then the plot carries on with you being shown around the Star System 3, which is actually a different from the original starter system and the sort of rundown ruined system of 2, Cantera, the De Vries system. Omicron Lyra is really high-tech built up. Basically, the gates all shut down, bloody, bloody, blah, and then the gates are suddenly reopening and people are rediscovering each other. And we find that in Star System 3, they've all been doing really well for the past, like, 100 years or so. Yeah, and it's all super high-tech, loads of infrastructure and everything. And to be honest, if that gate had been open from the start, I could have just popped next door and bought what I needed from the neighbouring shop.
Yeah.
You know, with one freighter jump, with no need for any kind of military escort. But where would be the fun in that? Anyway, I'm quite enjoying the system 3 there. It's got some really quite spectacular sector space. There's like the big Coruscant style planet that fills half of the skybox and you're sort of in high orbit over it. And then there's one section of it you might see on the video where you're actually in the upper atmosphere of one planet and all the star bases are sort of got these rocket thrusters underneath them and stuff. And
that seems highly inefficient.
it's like the Captain Scarlet sky base type arrangement there. Yeah, highly inefficient, but it looks damn cool and it's quite interesting. But the story's a little bit weak and uninspired at that point. You're sent off on some really quite flimsy pretexts to just go and have a look around the system. You know, go talk to this contact, escort this really slow freighter. And then once it thinks you've had enough of looking around System 3, it really sort of graunches the gears and then jumps into this plot with, oh no, the Xenon are attacking us now. You know, regular fans of the franchise will know that the Xenon, who I think were there since the first game, they are the X of X, the title X, whatever, refers X being the initial of the Xenon race. And the Xenon are effectively, basically, they're out-of-control rogue artificial intelligence terraforming systems that the humans in antiquity launched into the universe, and they've basically become self-aware and have just gone crazy trying to terraform everything and everyone, and have become the big sort of series-wide menace and nemesis. So we find ourselves pitted against those for the final act of the thing. That then sort of really quickly propels you over into System 4 Maelstrom, which is a sort of ruined, evil, creepy, weird space type place. It's you find yourself doing quite a lot of... There's a bit of a minor side story with another race that have had a hidden colony and they have an idea and you're going in to try and sort out the Xenon menace for once and for all, and it all sort of rattles through quite quickly. And it's not too difficult game terms, as long as you manage to buy, and if you've done any kind of mercantile work in the game, you'll have enough money to buy all of the upgrades for your stupid Albion skunk ship. If you get all your bits and pieces on there up to Mark 4 shields and engines and Mark 2 gunnery, you'll probably be fine dealing with the exciting culmination of the storyline, which is basically going in. Some scientist gives you a chameleon type device, which basically lets you not basically shows the Xenon as friendlies, and then you have to sneak into their big hub system where all their star bases are, plant some bombs. You actually get to do a little walk around on the Xenon stations, and they had taken the time and effort to make a different style of station for them.
Wow!
I know, they must have had a bit of spare time on their hands.
Time and effort, something you do not hear about this game.
Yeah, pretty much every other race in every other part of the universe has exactly the same style of interior star bases, even when the exteriors are vastly different, you know. They were so proud of their walking in stations add-on bit that I think they didn't realise that it needed a lot more work than they put into it to make it click, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, plant your bombs on the station, then predictably enough the cloaky shield thing fails, and then comes the cavalry and the heavy ships, and there's a big old bun fight in the final system with the Xenon star bases, which you wreck a load of them, and ta-da! That's it. End of story. You know, there's some sort of waffle about, oh no, they've all gone back to the Albion system, something, something, something. I went back and had a look afterwards, couldn't find anything. and there's a, oh well, right, we'll keep an eye on this station, but we don't know where else they'll strike next. Dun, dun, dun. And I don't know what the DLC does for the story. I didn't bother buying
any.
There's two, I think.
Wow.
I think there's one called Secret Service Missions, which I think you might get as free, but there's a Teladi Outpost one. And I just can't imagine anyone who'd bought this thing anywhere near its launch and immediately leaping on any kind of DLC for it, because you'd have to be either, you know, extremely insane or a victim of Stockholm Syndrome at that point. So, yeah, there we go. Teladi Outpost stuff there. Yeah. I don't know, scroll down a bit more. He's on Steam there looking at it all. Yeah, I think it's just the Teladi Outpost, which is another £8.
It is another £8.
I don't know what that's like. Apparently it adds another star system with a couple of sectors in. I mean, I you know, mock the star map for having only four star systems with three lines on it, but each star system does contain about four or five sectors, and each sector contains about eight or nine zones. So it's a bit more complex than it seems at
first
glance.
This is only two sectors, though.
It's this thing, really. Wow, okay. And each sector there would probably have four or five zones. I imagine it probably contains a lot of empty space so that you can rush out and build your own star bases. So I finished the story and I got my little fledgling empire there, and it's let me have my spaceships back, and I'm now quite glad that it's all over, to be honest, because now I can get back to the essential space transport tycoon of it all, which is what I was really enjoying before I accidentally went on with the story. So I got the sort of the whole, it's done the sort of the typical open world sandbox story type finish, which is no real resolution to the actual status quo, and off you go and do what you like in our massive sandbox.
Well, it's better than
I'm actually quite grateful for.
It's better than the one most games seem to do now, which is to have the big climactic mission and then put you back just before the big climactic mission.
I've seen a couple of games do that, and you think, huh, what, hey? Oh, all right. So the open world bit only exists as a sort of room within the main story, whereas a good sandbox game does it the other way around. You've got the story, which is enough to tutorial you through all the basic mechanics, give you a bit of an interesting cinematic ride through a story of sorts, and then out the other side and a sandbox to play with. I've noticed that the Plutarch Mining Corporation, I've been raiding them extensively for all their ships and stuff for the last, you know, most of the mid-story area. They had their faction from me reset from minus 30 down to minus 19, so I suspect if you hadn't been plundering them extensively, they'd have gone neutral. And I didn't want that, really, anyway, so that's good. It's nice to have an enemy with a very poor amount of personal security and a vast industrial surplus, you know, on your neighbouring star system.
Yeah, it's the best kind of enemy.
I am kind of farming the enemy. It was bad. I mean, I had a real nightmare of it. I've found that my mining ship got blew up by random incursions and stuff. That's okay. I wasn't really paying attention. I was doing the story. I come back, and the mining ship that I was at is under the control of my starbase, and I need it to be there so that it can find new ores and materials for free to keep the old furnaces going and stuff. So I thought, right, I need a new mining ship then. Let's pop back to the System 1 and go and liberate one from the enemy again. And so I started working on that. And I managed to find one that was, because if it's too near a friendly starbase, the friendly starbase will just start hammering you while you're trying to do the boarding mission. So I managed to get that done. And then the boarding started, and I look over and I think, oh no, it's one of them massive destroyer things edging its way towards me. I thought, oh God, right. So I flew over and had a crack at that, managed to get that disabled, got its guns down. And in the end, I ended up boarding that and stealing that. And then by the time I got back to the mining ship I was going for originally, a random patrol had killed it. It's like, ah! And that happened about two or three times in different sectors of the PMC's start, you know, in different sectors of Albion. And so I've ended up with like four destroyers and a carrier and still no mining ship. I'm just really bad at liberating civilian infrastructure.
Have you considered taking all of the destroyers?
I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah, eventually they just won't have any capital ships and then it'll get a bit easier, I suppose. And I'll have a massive space navy and not really any enemies to deal with. So, you know. But I don't know. I mean, because as well as the sort of construction ship it gives you as part of the story, which is what makes the starbase that you get as part of the story, you can also go to friendly shipyards and commission new construction ships and they can be made to fly out to empty space in various sectors and deploy new types of starbase. And I just quite like the idea of setting up the infrastructure, the economy, the closed loop system where all the mining ships supply the other starbases which produce the other things and so on. I mean, the end result of it all is nothing I particularly need, but it's more the activity of doing it is the thing.
Sometimes you've got to build.
I know, I want to, like I say, literally space transport tycoon, you know, that's what I want to do with the sort of open world aspect of it now. Obviously, I'm going to get bored of that eventually, but I'm gonna see how far I get with just pottering around with the leftover, what's left of the universe.
So now you've completed it,
yes,
is it safe to say that there is actually a good game buried inside a bad game?
I think so, yeah. I think it's worth it. I think, you know, it's a shame it's taken this long to get to that point, but certainly because I remember when we were reviewing it to begin with, there was two very different and both quite critical problems with it. One was just the sheer number of bad bugs, out and out bad QA, like scripting that breaks down, AI behaviours that don't work properly, crash to desktops, all that kind of stuff, which you could all lump together into one thing, and I'd say on the whole that's all gone now, that's all been sorted, but that is the easy stuff to spot and the easy stuff to fix. You know, this is, you know, it's basically things going wrong that in the way that the game's designers didn't intend. And that's fine, you know, if you can get that fixed. I mean, that kind of problem shouldn't be there in the first place. That's why you need proper grown-up QA, even in the games industry. But, you know, you give it enough testing, you give it a long enough development, you don't crunch, you plan your resources and everyone works hard and well, and you can launch a game that launches smoothly, and that seems to be quite an amazing feat these days,
doesn't it?
Everyone goes, oh, it was amazing, it launched, there was hardly any bugs. Like that was some kind of really out there unexpected bonus, when that's what we should be expecting, you know. I mean, perhaps a little biased given my job, but then on the other hand you've got this other big lump of stuff, which is the game not working very well in the way the designers intended, you know, essentially a game designed in a bad way that doesn't, and that can be quite subjective. You know, they've designed the sort of game they want to play, that may not be the sort of game I want to play, and that can be a more subtle and more different thing. And I did want to like it right from the start, but it was hard to. But it's much better now. And I think technically it's there, but design-wise, I don't know. It's still an odd duck. It's still an acquired taste, I think. It does require a bit of work to get into, I think.
Yeah.
And particularly for people who are familiar with how X used to work. This is the real problem, is that it didn't really strike much of a chord with the fans of the franchise.
Yes.
People who've been there all the way from X, 2, 3, Terran Conflict, Albion Prelude, all of those games were of a very specific style, which hadn't actually changed that much since the very first game.
Well, we speculated about it.
And then suddenly, whoa, what the hell's this thing?
Yeah, we speculated before that it was because they were going after the console.
Yes,
market.
It feels like a console game, the control system, the design.
And ironically, never made it onto consoles,
yes.
So that worked out well for
them. I reckon
them.
There was probably some sort of console deal they were angling for that didn't work. Yeah. Still, there we go. So I think if you like space shooter trader combat stuff, it's a respectable addition to that stable now. It's never going to be the best. It's never going to be, you know, better than, I don't know, I'm looking groping for examples now. I think Elite Dangerous is probably better technically than it is.
But there's more to do in X.
There's more charm in X, I think. Elite Dangerous is a very stark thing, I found it very difficult to connect with the game.
Space is big and empty.
Space is big and empty, and Elite Dangerous does that very well, and a little too well, I think, for my liking. But this is, you know, it's very much in the sort of Wing Commander, Privateer, Freelancer, that kind of mould. It's trying to be a game of that sort, and I think now that the problems are sort of mostly ironed out, I think it just about does it. The story's not hugely inspired, but there are some interesting moments, and the game mechanics of it all are quite interesting, but I think underutilised by the story. You do tend to look, you do tend to have to look for the clever bits and find them yourself in many ways.
See, you could play all the way through this game and never really engage with the good bits.
Yes, I think, and if you didn't know that that's what you were expecting to find from having played the previous X games, then I think you probably wouldn't realise it was even put these, a lot of this stuff is even possible. You know, the way that it's doing the background simulation of all the sectors when you're not there, you wouldn't expect that if you didn't know that's what X does. You know, and the things, yeah, the shopping lists for the star bases and stuff, building that sort of stuff. I mean, it's odd in many ways. The star base construction aspects of it and the empire management all are much more accessible and interesting and immediate than any of the previous X games, because I remember X2 and perhaps 3 as well, you had to earn a colossal amount of money before you could even get started with the starbase, and that was always, you know, get your first solar power plant online and stuff, and then you had to find a massive sort of cargo transport ship to drag it from the starbase to the place, and you build them in situ now, and it's just basically the construction ship effectively becomes a mini space station with buy and sell orders reflecting what it needs to build the space station. Much easier and more accessible, yeah. And, yeah, just the capital ship gameplay of it all is fantastic and very cinematic as well. A couple of times, I don't know if you see this at all on any of the videos, but there's one once when I managed to drop the destroyer straight onto the jump beacon of a really, really busy PMC industrial hub, and it just appear with a big flash, and it does the sort of a bit like Galactica with the sort of, you know, the flashing down the ship, and suddenly whoomp, there it is, and then it just starts opening up with all the point defenses in all directions, like hails of fire coming out in all directions and stuff blowing up, smoke and trails and all the rest of it. Very, very stirring, very, very impressive. But you do have to work a bit to make that happen and find that in it, I think. So there you go. I will probably keep playing it a bit, but I have to say the wind's gone out myself a little bit, because now it's just the pottering about without the building up for any particular purpose. Yeah. I mean, after the end of the story, you do start to see Xenon incursions as a sort of general random thing now, which means that you do have to beef up your patrols and defences and stuff if you're having mining ships pottering about going where they like. You have to guard them, that kind of thing. But yeah, there's no sense of overwhelming universe-destroying menace that I've seen. I don't know, the final cutscene is quite enigmatic. It sort of hints at big, terrifying, next, you know, it gets even worse, ... type things. But I haven't really found anything in the game that's actually reflected on that. Perhaps it's there. Perhaps there's some hidden post-story content that I've not found.
Probably not. Sequel.
I made a real point of going back through everywhere and seeing what had changed after the end of the story, and I couldn't really see anything particularly. Especially, there's a couple of extra jump gates that are just sitting there, and they had been all the way through. I was thinking, oh, I wonder where they go. And nothing. So I don't know.
One of them obviously goes to the DLC.
Maybe they're hooks for additional content, yeah. But I think the DLC concept just died off quite badly after the
massive failure of the
reception of the main game, yeah. I mean, there's modding support for it, and there's apparently quite a few good mods out there that put whole new sectors on there with extra bits and pieces in, but I'm thinking in terms of modding, it's easy to add empty sandbox to the edge of your big sandbox, but how easy is it to add a whole new story to it with even better writing and voice acting and cutscenes?
It's very easy to add something with better voice acting.
It's all relative, I suppose, yeah. But I think in balance I've enjoyed it. It's just a shame it took me 2 years to get around to finishing it and enjoying it. And it took 2 years to get to that point. So, yeah, I don't know. They're probably still patching it as we go now. There's probably bug cases I haven't found yet, but they do seem committed to sorting it out. But I suppose sooner or later, I can't see there being much mileage in more DLC for this thing or a sequel for this. I think they may do... Yeah, because it is...
Guarantee the next one will be X4.
Well, yes. This theoretically is X4. It's the fourth one in the series. But then X3 had about four different releases or something. So I don't know if they're going to, I assume they're going to make an even better thing.
That's the worst search ever.
Yeah, I just watch you type X and 4 into Google and come back with nothing useful at all. Yeah. Your Google foo is weak, old man.
No, I didn't really think about that.
No, fair enough. So I suppose, you know, like, what else have EgoSoft done? Do we know?
X.
They just do this, so presumably there will be another X game. And whether they'll try and work what X Rebirth was into and take that forward, or whether they'll try and backtrack to X3 and develop that onward, I don't know. Depends. It's been an interesting couple of years for them, and who knows where they'll go next with it. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking about that, but it turns out I enjoyed it in the end.
Okay. I'm going to talk about... one of the PlayStation Plus games I got recently.
Okay.
And I'm going to start by...
You're still on that?
Yeah.
As an aside, how's that working out for you?
I'm going to cover that.
Okay. All right. Fair.
This is Unmechanical, which is a puzzle game. Okay. But I'm going to talk about PlayStation Plus as a general thing.
If you don't know what that is, that's essentially it's a sort of subscription service where they give you limited access, temporary access, yeah, to certain raft of titles every month.
Yeah, you get a couple of games, well, quite a few games every month, mm-hmm, and you get to keep them until you stop subscribing.
Oh, so they just keep going into the library and staying, yeah, there until you stop.
So I've got a massive library building up.
Oh, I see.
The problem is the level of games is, mm-hmm, going downhill quite rapidly.
It's always going to be the problem, isn't it? A sort of mixed bag approach.
Because the big problem is, on PS4,
yeah,
there aren't that many good games they can give away.
Because
they're all too new.
Yes. Oh, they're just not releasing enough. There's not a large enough, yeah, library, as it were, and, to start being able to
a
give
lot of
stuff
the
out.
Deals which they made at the start, which were to give away good games, seem to have disappeared because, you know, because EA is completely off the table for it.
They've all gone off to Origin and do their, yeah, own thing, yeah.
So I think EA's got its own system on Xbox, mm, which is a subscription thing where it gives you access to a bunch of their games.
Oh, okay.
So, which
and that's exclusive to Xbox.
Yeah, because I think Sony turned them down or something. They said, no, we've already got PlayStation.
Wow,
Plus.
Okay.
But so yeah, you got these lesser and lesser games coming onto the service, and it used to be stuff like they would put full games on every month.
Now it's two or three AAA, yeah, blockbusters.
Yeah. And now they just really put on stuff like, okay, Ground Zeroes, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes has been on quite a lot.
Mm.
But then again,
do you see repeats?
Not really, but it's stuff that lasts more than 1 month's been there.
Okay.
And even the PlayStation Plus version of Drive Club has now disappeared off the service.
Oh.
After,
okay,
a month, which is weird. But yes, okay. So the game's getting less and less, and this is a great example. This is a game from about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Which is a puzzle game where you're a floaty thing with a helicopter blade on top, a little, mm-hmm, robot,
yep,
who is taken underground. Mm-hmm. Against his will, and he has to puzzle his way out again.
Okay.
Which you do via the use of a little tractor beam underneath you, which you use for picking stuff up and pulling stuff.
This is sounding familiar. This sounds like a remake of a very old format. The one where you're in the caves with a spaceship and you've got the tractor beam picking up bits and swinging them around.
Yeah, yeah, very much
I
like
can't
that.
Remember what it's called now, but yeah, this is not a new format.
No, it's definitely not a new idea.
Yeah.
But it's a couple of hours worth of gameplay with puzzles, and every single puzzle is always pull this, move this over here, do this in this order.
And all you are is a floaty robot with a tractor beam, everything looks like a nail. Yeah.
Although you do got upgraded so you can go underwater at one point.
Oh,
so,
wow. Yes. Mixes it up.
Yeah. Mm. It's a nice puzzle. Before that, there's one where you have to drop stones into water to raise the water level.
Okay, yeah.
Or,
so a bit of variety there.
Yeah. So it's an interesting puzzle game. There's a couple of puzzles I really don't like because they're timed.
Oh.
You have to pull... You have. There's one in particular where there's a grating with lots and lots of doors going up and down in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to then use explosives.
Oh, wow.
In one of four different things, mm, in the right order,
yeah,
to make them go up, and they come down at different rates to make it come down, so you get then you have to get in and across, and it was really quite horribly
that sounds hugely
jarring.
Frustrating right there, yeah.
So
did you have a sense of enormous elation when you got through it, or have you not got through it and you just stopped playing?
No, I got to the end of the game. It only takes 3 hours to play. I got to that bit and got through it and thought, oh, I hate it when games do that.
Oh, that's no good. Then if you get through the other side and you don't get that enormous sense of success,
no,
you just think, oh, God, thank God that's over.
You just think, no, you better not throw that at me again.
Yes, that better be the only one. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there was another interesting puzzle where you played a tune at you, then you had to basically use a step sequencer to play it back using stuff.
So
it's interesting.
So you're trying some interesting stuff there.
Yeah. And it has a quite hopeless but interesting stab at the end of having a bit of meaning to the game.
Oh, yes. You sort of get near the end and think, crap, we got to put the intense philosophical point in there, because ever since Bioshock, you know.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not quite that bad, but it is sort of on the end for no apparent reason.
Sometimes the cake is just a lie.
Yeah, sometimes the cake is very often a lie. It's fun and it's interesting and it's good and it's graphically not that great, but it doesn't need to be. And the first couple of seconds of playing the game are graphically appalling, and you think, oh my God, what have I got myself in for at this point? This looks like a PS2 game.
Mm. Mm.
Which is bizarre because I think it's done using Unreal.
Oh, right.
But it's interesting, it's fun. There's, if you'd like an interesting, straightforward puzzler, then go for it. But this is the sort of level of games we're getting on PlayStation Plus now.
Well, that's it, yeah.
I'm actually wondering whether or not I should bother subscribing, because I'm not playing multiplayer on PlayStation 4. Cause...
Do you need the PlayStation Plus to be allowed to multiplayer?
Yeah.
So it's like the Xbox Gold thing.
Yes, they copied the Xbox Gold thing.
So you can't play with your friends online using a PS4 unless you're also a member of this thing anyway. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't anyway, because I only ever use my PlayStation 4 for exclusive games and for the stuff I get through with PlayStation Plus.
So I'm just looking. You've got your Steam page up there for Unmechanical. It's available on PC as well, obviously. And that's saying £7 there. And from everything you're saying and talking about it,
it's not worth £7.
It does sound like sort of nearer to the... I don't want to use the term indie game to mean poor quality or anything, but shorter, more concise, and ultimately, yes, less value for money if you've paid £40 for it.
Yeah, no, it would never be £40.
Is that indicative of what PlayStation Plus is becoming?
Yeah, it's the smaller indie titles, and it is the smaller indie titles.
Because they're the only ones that are coming through fast enough to be able to shovel into the hopper. Yeah,
yeah.
They've got to give out 8 kilos worth of entertainment a month, otherwise customers are not going to get their money.
They obviously can't, for some reason, go back and get any of the AAA companies, the big publishers, to say, yeah, here, have this.
Well... I was trying to think of it from the perspective of the marketing department of the accountants of a AAA publishing studio and stuff. Is offering your things to PlayStation Plus worth doing? Would you make more money on its single unit sales?
I think on
direct?
PlayStation 3, yes. But on PlayStation 4, there's still such a small amount of good games.
Oh. So you think this would pick up? Give it a year or two.
Give it 5 years, it will have a massive backlog of really good things to give away.
Yes.
And it may pick up. But I'm beginning to get worried at whether there are certain games which I think Sony should have given away by now.
Okay.
Like Knack, which is one that they control. Mm-hmm. And I don't get why that hasn't been for free. That is not selling. Mm. I guarantee that is not bringing in any money.
Well, yeah.
Maybe, it's not that
good. Perhaps they're pacing themselves, because if this is the way things are now, how quickly can they get up to the point where there's a big catalogue? Or are they going to have to endure quite a few more dry months ahead?
Yeah.
Are they rationing stuff out?
Because they've given away, on the PlayStation 3 side, they've given away Uncharted games.
Is it worth it if you've only got a PlayStation 3 then?
Oh, it's definitely worth... Well, I don't know whether or not it's going to remain worth it if you've got a PlayStation 3.
Because eventually you'll have everything.
Yeah, but if you've got a PS3, a PS4 and a Vita, it's definitely worth it.
But you're not really considering that's the carrot. You're not considering the stick either, which is if you stop paying for PlayStation Plus, how much games are you going to lose?
Yeah,
they all go away, don't they? And you've been racking up month after month after month, hundreds of titles, dozens of titles.
Hundreds. That's how they keep you in.
As soon as you stop paying, you've got to go and buy all that again. There's individual titles.
It's a clever psychological thing saying that... Yeah. I've got all this sunk cost. It's the sunk cost fallacy. I've got all this sunk cost.
Well, it's not a fallacy, though, is it? That's the problem. You really have got to keep paying. Otherwise, you've got to keep throwing the money after it. Otherwise, you lose access to the things you already thought you had.
Yeah. But then how many of those other games I haven't played yet am I ever going to play? Because...
Yeah,
a lot of them are very rubbish.
It's okay if you don't intend to go back and play them anymore, but this is precisely the sort of overriding worry I've had about the way games are going into it, including Steam, for example. So you don't pay a subscription to Steam, but if Steam decided to vanish one day, you know, how many games are we lost then? Yeah, and all of us probably losing hundreds of titles and stuff.
Yeah, if Steam vanishes, I will fix it.
We live in an age where you just don't own anything you buy anymore, and I've always been very unhappy about that, uncomfortable with it all. But there's not much we can do about that anymore.
Because there is.
It's all online DRM activation anyway.
No, on PC it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, notionally,
on PC,
it'll
be gotten around.
It'll be solved.
It is very easy to strip the copyright protection out of Steam if Steam disappears.
Yeah, yeah.
While Steam is still around, it is actively trying to fight that.
Yeah.
But when Steam stops fighting back, it's very easy to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not advocating piracy or hacking or anything like that, but I just...
This is when it all becomes abandonware.
Eventually, this will become an issue. I mean, we joke about this a lot when we're chatting in the pub, and often the conclusion we reach when we talk about this is that if Steam's gone, then we've got bigger problems because we're probably trying to eat radioactive cockroaches in the ruins at that point. But it still worries me, and perhaps unreasonably. Perhaps I'm just not being rational, and perhaps I should just, learn to let go. But I do worry that I don't own the things I've bought. And I like to own the things I bought. I prefer physical media. You can't get physical media anymore. I mean, last time you went to any high street computer game shop?
I walked past Game the other day.
Yeah,
I thought, game's still a thing.
They got a ton of console stuff, and then the latest I think the last time I went in there, they just had Steam cards. Yeah. You know, scratch off the foil on the back, type your number into Steam. So, you know, they've basically given up.
Well, don't forget that the installer on the disc for Metal Gear Solid was the installer for Steam.
Yeah, yeah, it just sent you to Steam and included a key, presumably. It's just, so, you know, this war, it has been lost already, so here we are. But it still worries me. And this PlayStation Plus thing seems particularly vulnerable because, yeah, exactly, you need an active financial contribution ongoing to keep access to it. Yeah. You've never bought any of that stuff.
And it's on a closed system.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're never going to be able to, you know, download a patch or anything.
When Sony decide that PlayStation Plus is no longer a viable thing.
And that's entirely feasible.
Yeah.
Given the lowering of quality that we're seeing here, it's potentially they could they could get to a point where studios are so uncooperative that they just can't offer anything on PlayStation Plus that's worthwhile anymore. Yeah, then they have to just shut it down.
You could quite easily see a situation where they can't offer anything on PlayStation 4 anymore.
Because all the studios have buttoned up
just
and
aren't
said
enough
no.
games to give away.
Yeah.
And then people actually start realising, hang on, while we weren't looking, you started charging for multiplayer, you gits.
Yeah, and more and more people deciding that what they are being given each month isn't worth it anyway and giving up, which sounds like you might be pondering. And eventually they'll just not be earning enough money to maintain the thing.
Well, it just doesn't make it worthwhile.
Yeah, so they'll just kill it because that's Sony. That's what they do. You know.
Even PlayStation 5. When the PlayStation 5 comes along, they may decide that they don't want to have PlayStation Plus anymore.
No.
They may decide that multiplayer has to be free again.
Well, that's very similar to the old sort of philosophy behind backward compatibility. Why do we go to all the extra time and effort and potential loss of earnings to make all our stuff backward compatible from the PlayStation 5 to the PlayStation 4 when we could just invent an entirely different format and force everyone to buy their games again?
Don't get me started. Sony having done that.
That's basically how it's worked before, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I can't see why the PlayStation Plus package would give you anything for free when they didn't have to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah.
Unmechanical's
great, but it's not worth £7 and,
Yeah. Is it worth a month's worth of PlayStation Plus?
Yeah. It's 3 hours worth of gameplay.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Deus Ex. No, not Human Revolution, and
not the new one.
Not the other one either. No,
because there's a new one coming.
There's another one.
Yeah.
Oh wow, they've firmly rebooted that franchise, have they? Then I need to play the recent one.
Is it good?
Is it Human Revolution?
Yeah, it's good.
I need to give it a go just to see because
as long as you play the remastered one with the less boss fights. Otherwise, you'll swear as much as I do.
Okay. Yeah. See now, I'm talking about the original. The original Deus Ex thing, which came up on GOG as a sort of £2.49 game, which is that's it for me, that'll do. So I picked that up, been playing through, Game of the Year edition, yep. And it's brilliant. It really is. I've got on the beach there, you know, on the dock at Liberty Island, got me taser and my little wrist crossbow thing. I don't know, I'm just having a whale of a time in there. So I don't know if anyone listening doesn't know what Deus Ex is at this point.
Everyone knows.
I'm going to take that as read then.
Yeah.
Invisible War, that's what it was called. That was the sequel.
It's got mixed reviews on Steam.
That's the second one in the series. Yeah, that was
mixed.
It was all right. I think it was good in concept, but it lacked some of the charm of the original, and it really, really suffered from Xbox syndrome. All the levels are tiny, the control system was all over the place. It was about the same sort of time as Thief Deadly Shadows, which also suffered from Xbox as well. Just the sort of, you know, sort of 100 meter square levels with the old U-shaped corridors everywhere and lots of loading.
Oh, I own the first Deus Ex on Steam.
You apparently own it already. Did you not know?
No,
this is the problem of our age, or one of them anyway. No, it's a Deus Ex. It's your sort of near future conspiracy thriller where you're a guy with sunglasses and a trench coat who is a nano augmented agent for UNATCO as the sort of last holdouts of a fracture of a crumbling world government trying to deal with the Grey Death and also various terrorist organisations trying to subvert the rule that's left on the earth. Good times. Charging. Basically, first person shooter, but very intelligent first person shooter. So, thinking man's FPS, as it were.
Back from a time when they were allowed.
Yeah, when was this? Look up the date for this. I'm guessing 2000.
2000.
Maybe. 2000.
22nd of June 2000.
There we go. That's 15 years old. That's crazy. And it still holds up. It's still great. Yes, the polygon count's low. Yes, the textures are a bit blurry. But the gunplay of it all, the action, the adventure of it all, the stats and the skill system still hold up. The story was always really interesting and quite fun to work through. You're basically going all around the world pinning down elements of this conspiracy and trying to work out whose side you're on and whose side everyone else is on and all the rest of it. and trying to sort of ultimately avert a kind of machine apocalypse control of the world by evil governments. So, good stuff. Yeah, I raced through. Now, this was one of the first games where I think it was became feasibly possible to do the pacifist playthrough. The Deus Ex pacifist playthrough is definitely a thing, a renowned thing.
A
hard thing, yeah. I tried it. I thought, right, I'm you know, because I rocked up to this thing all smug. Yeah, 15-year-old game, played it lots, completed it. I know what I'm doing. My God, it's really difficult. Yeah, the problem is ammo scarcity. There's loads of bullets lying around, but there's only very, very few charges for the... you get like a stun prod, like a taser... It works as a point-blank melee weapon and is only really useful if they haven't seen you. You get tranquilizer darts for your wrist crossbow thing as well, but the ammunition for those is so scarce that you can't really go through an entire level clear, you know, putting everyone to sleep and piling them
up
in a cupboard.
Have you
considered modding? Yeah. Well, you can certainly go through killing everyone, but then all throughout the initial cutscenes, your older brother, who's also one of these nano-augmented super agents, keeps telling you off for excessive force. And then also famously, and I think Statue of Limitation on spoilers is fine, but about four or five missions in, you learn that the people you've been attacking in the first four missions were actually the good guys all along, and it's your people who are controlling you at the start who turn out to be the bad guys. But this was 15 years ago, and that was a new and fresh idea back then. So they're allowed to get away with that.
When was Alias on TV?
I don't know.
No, anyway, yes.
But yes. But yeah, I mean, it's par for the course now that the person who is giving you the orders when you start a first-person shooter is always the enemy. Also, you know, the act to reveal, no problem.
Yeah.
But no, that was new and fresh and interesting back then. But yeah, the idea that you could just go through sneaky, or guns blazing, it shed a lot of... it wasn't quite as hardcore and sophisticated in the stealthing as Thief, but shared a lot of conceptual ideas. You could certainly play it as, you know, in the way that the old Thief games. Mm. Not surprising, because I think quite a lot of the Ion Storm team at that point were either ex-Looking Glass people or it was part of Looking Glass. There was some sort of crossover thing going on there at the time, I know. Those were quite closely connected and linked series. Yeah, so I've got all the way through the Liberty Island level, you know, just about managed. So initially I was trying the pacifist playthrough, and it didn't really... I kept running out of the stuff to knock people out
with. Did it work until the first point where you thought, oh, screw this, and shot them?
No, I wanted to not kill them all, but I ran out of things to knock them out unconscious with. I mean, your modern stealth games...
I used a big stick.
Well, I think you're... Dishonored, I suppose, is perhaps your most recent modern incarnation of the stealth game.
Maybe. Or Thief. Thief. You could say Thief.
Sorry, is there a new Thief game?
No, there wasn't. Rubbish.
Dishonored definitely out-thiefed Thief time, yeah. But with that, if you can get up behind someone unawares, you can just knock them out. You use left mouse to stab them in the guts and kill them, or right mouse to grab them around the throat and, you know... Give them brain damage through asphyxiation, yeah. just to salvage your own conscience. But you don't have... In Deus Ex, you don't have an unlimited uses point-blank knockout. I mean, you do
or a
Thief.
Brick, as we call it.
Yes, a blackjack sock full of sand, whatever, you know. But no, you have to use this shock prod thing, which is the nearest equivalent. That has limited ammo. So the pacifist playthrough in Deus Ex is
a
very
one?
Difficult thing. Solar, no, because it all takes place at night.
Yeah,
the guy's walking past the bush and he just hears this noise and then a tick, 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 tick,
and
they're coming up behind
him. No, not like clockwork, like the wind-up radios and wind-up torches.
I don't know. It's
is that Trevor Bayliss who made
this? This is a taser. We're talking a lot of volts here. I think you're going to have to be winding that thing for quite a long time.
He's got a mechanical arm.
How's
he powering his arm?
I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
How's he powering his cybernetics?
You totally derailed me. It was something to do with Deus Ex being awesome, I think.
Yeah, keep going with that.
Yeah, so I've got to the... The problem is I've played it lots, and I'm quite bored of the early first levels. You know how you get a favourite game you play lots and lots of times?
Yeah.
And every time you go at it, you are either successful and get all the way to the end, or you get bored and you wander off.
Yeah.
And in both of those situations, you'll play the first couple of levels. So you get so sick of those. And for everyone, there'll be in every favourite game that you replay, there will be a point at which you have to try and get to before
that first
you
bloody planet on Mass Effect.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, if you can make it to the Citadel station, then things pick up. Yeah. But
if you slog on that first mission.
That Eden thing. God, down that sort of, essentially, what's essentially a single corridor with bends in. Yeah. Hello, Ashley. Nice to see you again. Yes, yes. I think there's some kind of alien ahead. But every game like that, every story-based game, there'll be a point in the plot beyond which you get, and suddenly all those sort of past replays will drop away, and eventually you get into sort of almost virgin territory. Yes, I've obviously completed it a couple of times before, but only a handful. Whereas that bloody Liberty Island level, I've done hundreds of times, and I'm getting through it, and it's a good game, of course, but you do have to put the effort in to get to the interesting bits again, and anything that you play lots and lots and lots doesn't, you know, loses interest.
Yeah,
anyway.
Except Burnout Paradise.
There's probably a name for that phenomenon, but I don't know what it is. So I'm into New York now and working around the Hell's Kitchen levels.
Have you seen Daredevil?
No. I guess he's there somewhere, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. They made a big thing about how the locations in Deus Ex were based on real places. I have no idea. And plus, they're like, I don't think Hell's Kitchen has like 25 polygons. I think there's more to it than that.
It's got quite a lot of detail.
Texture depth's bigger in real life. But yeah, so I'm looking forward. I think if I can get to the Hong Kong, the first couple of bits where you're backwards and forwards across New York, and gradually discovering that you're working for the wrong guys. I think if I can get through that into the bit where you break away to the resistance and get helicoptered over to Hong Kong, from there it gets interesting again, because there's a bit on an oil tanker, there's a bit on an undersea base, there's a bit in Area 51, there's lots of interesting stuff going on. I think there's some stuff in Paris as well. But I just need to push on and get to those bits again, and it'll all be great and groovy. Yeah, I only played the second game, the Invisible War, on Xbox One. Not Xbox. Well, whatever. The Xbox.
Yeah.
The Xbox. Whatever that original black and green one was. I played it on there, and yeah, like I say, that was a machine that was a bit ahead of its time, or a bit behind its time, or a bit whatever the posh way of saying it, never had enough memory to load PC games properly.
Welcome to the world of console gaming.
Yeah, there was a big period of around sort of, 2003 to about 2006, where all games had levels that were really, really small.
Well, no, it was... Even with the 360 and the PS3, they were really, really small, because they only had 512 mega memory.
So it's still a problem with the 360?
Oh, no, the 360 and the PS4 have got 8 gig, which is a bit better.
And presumably nowadays, Xbox One and PS4, they can do more or less what a gaming PC. Yeah, fair enough.
They can do what a basic gaming PC can do.
That's good, because it means that yeah, but it means that what's being designed is the same for every platform, and no one part of that system, that sort of ecosystem, is holding game
design.
Tell that
to the Lost Thief game, which had very, very partitioned up zones that you went through, which somebody on PC modded it so that it all loaded at once.
Just take the L-shaped corridors out. Fair enough. So chipping away at that a bit. I don't know if I'll make it past the point of no return into the interesting stuff again, or whether I'll get bored and bounce off again, but I'm enjoying it a lot anyway. Fantastic nostalgia. I recommend people have a look, and I need to get a go at Human Revolution.
You should play Human Revolution. Okay, things about Human Revolution. Yeah. Architecture is fantastic. Yeah. Music is fantastic.
Yeah.
Boss fights are better than they were.
That's the one thing I remember a lot about the original Deus Ex. It really hardly suffers from boss fight at all. In fact, spoiler alert, the last level of the culmination of the whole story and plot and game is effectively you sneaking around a big sort of tech complex trying to throw switches without being spotted. The big bad has gone full on transcendent overload with his mega computer, and you've got it's quite a generous timer, and you have to basically just go around dismantling his apparatus so that he blows himself up when he goes for the big upload. There's no dodge the three times hammer attacks and hit the orbs to make him vulnerable or any of that nonsense. It's refreshing. Even back then, boss fight was a problem.
Yeah.
But, so you can probably find that Steam, GOG, wherever.
Yeah, everywhere.
And the Game of the Year edition on GOG is totally compatible, no problems. Didn't see any problem with that. They're getting very good at what they do.
They're incredibly good at that.
Yeah.
They just released all the Falcon games.
A lot of games that I've got the first time round that I desperately spend like days and days trying to get working and looking for obscure patches and fan-made patches and stuff, and GOG just seemed to manage to sort it. So
my rule now is it is cheaper on my time to go straight to GOG.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea of buying a game I already own again, but sometimes it can be justified, so over to you.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a difficult game to talk about.
Okay.
This is a game called Beginner's Guide.
Right.
Which is it is framed as Mega Fan, has put together what is basically a supercut with commentary of a game designer he likes, all of his experimental little indie games.
Okay.
And
sounds a bit meta.
Yeah, it's very meta. And over the top of it, he's got this commentary of saying how he thinks that the games have evolved and what he was trying to say with them and what he was doing.
So hang on, the guy doing this is not the guy who designed the original game.
No, and that's very important.
Okay.
This is going to be a little bit spoilery, not in an important way.
Director's commentary, the game.
Yeah, sort of. So this guy is saying what he thinks is going on about what this decision was about, what this game's about, what he was trying to say about this game.
Right.
Changing things like speeding up through a maze because it's a bit boring, that kind of thing. And it's basically this meta commentary on game development, fandom, and what you take away from games. What the lens
sounds
of
a bit like art to me.
Oh, it's very much art. And what the lens of looking at a game does to that game. And it is a fascinating
sort of an exploration of perceptions of it all. Yeah.
And it is the first game I think I've played where the amount of thinking you do about the game is longer than the game. And the game is not particularly short. It's still a couple of hours long.
Yeah.
But the amount of thinking it makes you do, you'll be thinking about this game days afterwards thinking, hang on, am I doing this because of this? Or am I doing this because of this?
So it's sort of led you part of the way on a journey and you've gone off on, you've taken that direction and gone galloping off into a supposition of your own.
Through a lot of it and then holds up a massive mirror to you along the way saying, do you recognise this in yourself?
Yeah.
Do you recognise this in the people you know? Yeah. You start to...
So that's quite uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. It depends. Mm. Everyone.
How judgmental do you think it is? Is it just holding up a mirror and not making comment, or is it criticising you for not getting...
It's not judgmental.
Yeah.
Stuff happens in the game and things that are revealed in the game.
Yeah.
It's only judgmental if you apply that to yourself.
Oh.
If you think that you have done this...
Oh, dear.
Then... And so it just affects everyone in a different way. So you've got all these people... Quite a lot of people who've played it have come away feeling really, really bad about it.
Yeah.
I didn't come away feeling really, really bad because I'm a narcissistic little idiot.
You're quite unempathetic, yeah.
Obviously, I am right and everyone else is wrong.
Well, that must be quite helpful in an exercise like this.
I came away thinking that one thing was great and something else that happens in it was really, really bad, but that's just the sort of thing that happens, and how could you ever avoid that? But other people come away thinking... Some people come away thinking, why do I bother?
So you have a vague amount of self-awareness, and from what you're describing, it sounds like I ought to just not go anywhere near this thing.
I don't know. I don't know where you're going to fall on it, because usually I know not to recommend something to you that's going to destroy you.
Thanks.
But I don't know if this would destroy you, or you'd just come away and you'd have the same opinion.
I think the possibility of destruction's enough to make me run a mile, to be honest. It sounds horrific.
Yeah, but the possibility of watching you be destroyed is also...
I am quite paranoid.
Yeah. So... It's a fact. The video you're watching now doesn't give away anything, by the way. It's just wandering through a level which is a mechanic from certain games, and that's all.
Okay.
And okay, it's saying something, but it's not saying something about the greater meta plot. So it's this really, really interesting, exciting experience. It's a walking simulator.
It does sound pretty good.
It is
good,
a walking simulator that has a point.
Yeah, so the basic format is you basically just following a series of waypoints through a largely static environment.
You'll start at the start of a game, you'll walk to the end of the game, and then you'll go to the next game, and there'll just be text, voiceover telling you what's going on.
Right, yeah, okay.
And none of the games are particularly complex. There's only a couple of times we ever have to actually interact with them properly. Usually it's just walking through an environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, it's just definitely one of those that sounds like it blurs the definition of game. But as an interesting experience, it sounds good.
Well, no, it's the closest to being both art, in a wanky kind of way to say. But
art with a capital A.
Yeah, and it's the closest of actually being proper. You know how sometimes a game will think it's commentary over the... genre it's doing.
Yes.
And it will think it's being...
And usually we get quite dismissive of that kind of thing.
It thinks it's being a lot cleverer than it is. This is being clever.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And
what a lot of games try to do, this manages to succeed
with. Okay. Because it manages to succeed
because it's not still trying to make a game out of it, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's not trying to make a game out of it, and also it's not trying to ram it down your throat in the same way that those...
Yeah. Do you see? Look, man is the monster! Yeah,
look! You're being clever!
Yeah, yeah.
You bring the evil to your own situation.
You are the monster. It was all you all along. Yeah, all right, whatever. Yeah, but I just here to blow up a few pixels. Just leave me alone. Yeah.
But this manages to shine a light on making games, both being a creator, a consumer, and a fan in three distinctly interesting
angles. I might risk it. I might give it a go.
Yeah, no, I think you should.
See what I come out of it all with. If there is no more podcast after that, then you'll have to find a new co-host because I'm clearly broke myself. But yeah.
It's really fascinating and interesting, and I wish I could say more. We may have to, if you've played it, do a spoilerific thing.
Yes, yeah. All right, well, we'll put it off, because I'm quite slow picking this stuff up anyway, so you've got plenty of time to go out and try it for yourself.
Yeah, but I do recommend everyone goes out and plays it, because it is fascinating and brilliant.
It sounds like we're...
I would like to know if it's possible to get to the end of it and think, oh, that was just that, was it? Because I don't know whether or not it's the fact that...
It sounds like it's really difficult to have a proper discussion about it without totally spoiling it. So we'll have to go away and come back after I've had a go in a few months, a month or two.
How do I make this sound like it isn't a bad thing? I don't know if you don't create things and put them out there for people to look at, like we do with the podcast, or lots of people do writing games, or people
writing
do
blogs.
With blogs.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if without that, if you were just purely a passive consumer, I don't know if it would have the same effect.
Okay.
Because it has it has commentary about blogging, it has commentary about...
Is anyone truly a passive consumer?
I don't know.
Everyone must make something at some point.
I don't know, because
some creative contribution to the world around them in some capacity.
Well, you can have
people do, surely.
Yeah, but do you have a creative contribution towards games? Or
that's,
do you just
rarer,
consume the
suppose,
games
yeah.
and have the creative contribution in the more interesting bits of your life?
Well, you chat with your mates in chat rooms or down the pub or on forums or whatever. Just that kind of non-professional discussion about a thing with your peers must be enough to trigger that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. With games, I think it's harder, but with films, I think it's very easy. You can watch a film,
you just go
take
there,
it in,
watch them, go away.
Yeah, and not really think about it.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people do that with games. But then again, I think that the people who do that on the Venn diagram of people who listen to podcasts and the people who
need
do
a diagram,
that,
yeah.
I don't think there's an awful lot of overlap.
Subset people who like games, union people who create things.
No, I think that if you're the sort of person who just takes them at face value and doesn't want any sort of introspection on them, you don't seek out podcasts about games.
Perhaps.
Because you're not interested in that.
Somewhat self-selecting, yeah.
Yeah. So I think everyone who's listening to us will probably take something away from it. And it may, I do warn you, it may be horrific and make you wish that you had made different life choices.
Well, we'll see how broken I am in a couple of months when I've had a go at this.
But it is very interesting and I do like it.
But yes, we will totally spoiler it at some point soon.
It is truly the most interesting game I've played this year.
Wow, that's quite high praise, yeah. Quite an accolade, considering the way, nearly November?
Yeah, it's November next week.
Yeah, so... In terms of the year hyperbole, yes. Good.
Yeah.
So I haven't really got anything else to talk about. No, played a bit of Riff. We should probably shut up, though. Yeah, do your spiel.
Yeah, you can go along to howtomurdertime.com, find our previous...
Is it hyperbole or hyperbole? I never worked it out.
Hyperbole.
Thank you.
Although Hyperbole was a fantastic game.
Hyperbole 28.
Yeah, that's a fantastic game. It wasn't that great. No, you can go to howtomurdertime.com where you can find our entire back catalogue of thousands of episodes. Actually, it's hundreds.
Thousands? No, millions?
It's hundreds. You can also go along to YouTube where you can find the video version of this show and all of the previous ones and some other various videos we do. We must make more of those. And if you like this on there, please could you like it and subscribe, because that'd be great, because I want to have the channel name at some point.
Is there a series of graduated perks for performance levels?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Do subscribe then.
Yeah.
He needs his achievements.
We got nice comments saying it's the best channel name anyone had ever seen for a YouTube channel.
Wow. Yeah,
fantastic.
Thank you.
I don't think they listened, because it was on
the... Did they actually watch any of the shows or listen to it?
It was on our insanely popular EverQuest video that no one can explain why it's quite so popular.
Oh, I wish that wasn't so popular. I'm going to have to play it full time now just to cater to the fan base.
And you can join us next week where we'll be talking about more of the same.
See ya.
Goodbye.